This week, I am joined by Anthea Bell, and you are going to love this episode if you are somebody who is interested in embodiment, empowerment, and full self-expression, which means you're in the right place. And if you have not yet subscribed, subscribe. Anthea Bell is an embodiment, energy, and transformation coach, a lifelong soul searcher, unerringly curious, open-hearted, and utterly dedicated to the women she works with, their elevation, their self-connection, and their knowing of deep potency. And I met Anthea at a retreat, at the Aliveness Retreat hosted by Susie Ashworth. And she was actually a couple of days late to that retreat. And she arrived just as I was having my own inner upgrade. Now, my upgrades are very, very physical and always have been. I am a soul five in numerology, and we touch on this in the podcast, and we touch on it also in her podcast, which I've popped in the show notes so you can listen to the episode I did for her podcast as well, and also find a beautiful new podcast if you are interested in embodiment and transformation and these things. And so she arrived, and so for those of you who've met me in person, you will know that whilst I am very sociable and deeply tactile once I know you, when I first meet people, and also when I am on retreat or in a space where I'm there for me, I am not on. And when I'm not on, I'm very insular and don't always come across as the most friendly and don't always come across as the most inviting because I'm very much doing myself. And at that retreat, there was a point where she arrived and I was moving energy through my body and was in quite a lot of physical pain. We'd never met before, and there was an instant connection, which very often happens for me. The more I embody my design, the more I show up as the empowered, embodied, and fully expressed version of myself, the more I electromagnetically connect to soul sisters and, you know, brothers and contracts and amplifiers, and it is just so juicy. Yeah, long intro today, apparently. I was also having a conversation in the Maven Haven inner circle recently about how the Maven Haven inner circle is a place for people who want people but don't like people, but want some more people in their life who also don't really like people. And it is a very distinct and energetic connection. And when we are being ourselves, there is nothing to do. It is all done electromagnetically, right? Our field and our aura is always talking with the universe and with everybody else and everything else in it, and therefore attracting, magnetizing, and repelling that which is for and not for us. Anyway, Anthea appeared and in a break kind of came over and without words kind of said to me, you know, can I touch your body or can I support you in this energetic shift? And it was very wordless and I agreed, and she just really helped me to move this stuck energy up and out through my body, which was so beautiful and so incredible. So she is magic, as am I, as are you, probably. Enjoy the episode. Please do, if you're watching it on YouTube, leave us a comment. If you are listening on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else, please do rate, review, and subscribe. And if you are on Instagram, please come and tag me, share that you've listened to it, slide into my DMs. It would be a real pleasure to get to put more names, faces, voices to those of you that listen, because I love the sound of my own voice, quite frankly. But what I prefer is to know who I'm talking to and to get to know you too. Without further ado, enjoy. Welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the podcast that, let's be honest, has evolved a lot over the last seven seasons. Season 8 is still for creative, neurospicy, Gen X and millennial misfits who are becoming empowered, embodied, and fully expressed. It's for you if the intersection of the physical and mystical is your jam. This is the show where I actively encourage you to feel your feelings rather than think them. Glow up, not grow up, and become full of yourself, because who the fuck else should you be full of? Each week I have intimate, unfiltered conversations about what it takes to be fully resourced and have happy, healthy, rich relationships as a dopamine deficient adult. I'm your host, Ebony Allard, aka Ebony Alchemy, a late diagnosed ADHD, combined type Asperger's, in case you like specifics, artist, mystic, and self-actualization facilitator. I'm an international award-winning multiple brain integration technique master coach with a special interest in embodied human design for neurodivergence. I've been in the personal development, creativity, and entrepreneurship spaces all of my life, and as a 5-2 emotional manifesting generator with left angle cross of distraction, I'm here to help you know what to trust and what to tune out. Each week, I share what you need to know, perspective shifting on wisdom, and practical ways for you to feel safe, removing your camouflage for more belonging, acceptance, and fulfillment. Ready? Let's go.
Hi.
I've been doing a lot of this recently. I'm starting podcasts in a like energy of anticipation, right? And instead of that kind of, I don't know, there's some people who have podcasts where they introduce their guests and it's like a real like introduction of this incredible person and so much I'm going to tell you who this person is before they begin. And this season is I just really want to talk to you. So it's less about my audience. Can we just have a conversation, please? And I kind of not doing the bit because I'm talking to people I love and know on a like very deep soul, intimate level. I am also like wondering whether my audience are like, you probably need to tell us more about this person. Like, who are they? Or maybe they're thinking, you sound like you know this person really, really well. This is a weird inside conversation. And all of that may or may not be true, perception, etc. And I just want to kind of preface this whole conversation with the level of intimacy that we have with others has nothing to do with how long we've known them.
No, it does not at all. It does not at all. And actually, as I was listening to you, I was reflecting on, I spent a good chunk of my second growing up. I had a first growing up, and then, it didn't work that well, so I had to do it again. And I spent a really big chunk of that time in spiritual community where you don't say what you do for a living, you don't say who your family are, you barely even say your last name. And so what happens is you get used to sharing the content of your heart. You get used to sharing the things that are the most meaningful for you and for that person in that moment. You have true connection. And you and I mean, we had that right off the bat when we met this summer. So yeah, I'm very happy to be known for all of those things, and also for everyone to just get used to hearing us and seeing what lands and resonates for them, for sure.
There is something really beautiful about modeling intimacy, because I think for me as well, intimacy used to be something that felt incredibly vulnerable. And it still feels incredibly vulnerable. And vulnerability used to be something that was weak or hidden or scary, and now is easy, beautiful, at the heart and soul of who I am. And I'm not into, I mean, I kind of know what led to that transition, but I also don't. But I think it's really beautiful to share or to normalize intimacy.
There's a really beautiful way that people sometimes use that phrase, which is into me see. And I think it is impossible to practice intimacy with others if you're not willing to practice intimacy with yourself. And chicken and egg, they can support one another. So, I learned to love myself more by virtue of allowing myself to be loved and to receive that love. And it's sort of the same with intimacy. I'm the same as you. For me, it is the nectar of life. And I spent most of my early life feeling, perceiving, feeling that I had no access to it whatsoever. And actually, that the deep content of my insides was not worthy of being seen. And so then you grow and you start to meet people who have often had that same experience. And so the delicious relishing of those sparks when you land with someone and your body just goes, oh, oh my God, I can breathe. It's really rich for me still now. And that's after like 15 years of self-work and 10 years teaching it. I love it. And I love that it's always so surprising. You land in space with someone and you just have a chemistry moment. And that is one of those beautiful signs that the world is just constantly delivering beauty to you if you're willing to stay open to it. The thing that blocks intimacy is shielding the heart, the most powerful organ in your body. We shield it a lot of the time. For understandable reasons, but at a certain point, like you're describing, we have to learn to let go.
I had a teacher once who, for a long time, I was very armored. And people still experience me as armored. And my birth story, my arrival in the world, my design, however you want to look at it, to some people I am. And I'm also the most open person you'll ever meet, right? And that, and embracing my own contrariness has been a real part of this journey. And I had a coach, and one of my conscious pieces of work was to remove the armor, to remove the separation between me and others. And she spoke to me about the heart being a two-way valve, and it being, this was years before I'd done any of the kind of anatomy, physiology, energetic, heart-based intelligence, neuroscience that I've done now. This many, many years ago. Just like it's a valve, it's a two-way valve. And because I was like, I'm the most loving person I know. I give all the time. I'm so heart-centered. I'm heart-led. I make my decisions by this heart. Like, I don't understand, what you're saying. And she was like, yeah, but you are great at opening the doors. You're great at everything that like floods out of the heart, but when was the last time you let anything in? And I was like, dangerous. No, thank you, right? And it was a really, really interesting conversation that has stayed with me for years, because she was also sort of saying to me, I was experiencing a lot of burnout at that time, and she was saying, you're operating from your solar plexus, you're operating from your will center, you're operating from this drive, rather than allowing yourself to be fueled through the heart, like a breath in and out, or like pulsation, back and forwards. And again, and it was the first time anyone had ever really had this conversation to me about heart. And I think for a lot of people, they experience their heart as quite binary, right? Like it's either open or closed, on or off. And I'm curious about your relationship with the heart and how that shifted and changed for you or over the years?
It's such a gorgeous thing to listen to, and it's a beautiful question. I love my heart. I have always been characterized by a couple of traits, even from when I was at school, and these things were mortifying. One is that I would be the sort of person that if you're walking around London and we walked over a bridge, I would, in a kind of moony eye glazy way, stop and look at the water and watch the boats go by, and they'd have to come drag me back into the crowd because they were obviously off to Wetherspoons or wherever it was that we went when we were 13. The second is that I've always wanted to self-improve. I've always seen myself as the thing that I needed to adjust or change, and that that can be a good thing, and that can also be a leaning that we have from a place of a fractured heart, from a place of thinking that there's something that we have to make up for. And when I think about what you're describing, the image that came up to me, or the sentence that came up to me, was the fractured heart. That when we're giving out from a fractured heart, then we're overloading our own, overriding, let's say, our own needs and wants and desires and fullness, because there is some sort of feeling of something that we have to make up for, or some way that we make ourselves deserving and valuable in the world. And all of the time that we're doing that, of course, we're not actually looking at what was causing the fracture in the first place. So my experience was very much that I did the same as you. I outpoured to other people, and often to the people that were involved in those challenges. But I did that in a way where I never looked at or had conversations about or gave voice to what had happened or what I felt had happened. Which means you're not really in congruity. We use that word a lot in the physical space. Like, is there congruity within the body? Do my joints line up with their relevant crevices? But also, we use it in personal identity and growth, right? Like, are my actions congruous with the identity that I choose to hold? Because it's all a construct anyway. I think that if you were to say to me today that I was a heart-led practitioner, I would grin in a space of recognition. And I think that one of the reasons people come to your door and they come to my door is that they know that there is more to tap into there. And they have become so habituated and conditioned to operate from the front of the brain in a way that is far more controlled than they realize, far more unconscious than they realize. And so, of course, they come with unbearable levels of stress or total apathy towards their lives, or recurrent heartbreak because they enter into the same narcissistic relationships again and again and again. Or, they're at a point in their business where they're not able to expand. If you want to expand your business, you've got to bet you've got to be willing to go to the heart, because for a good business, it has to be heart-led, right? And so what we're doing, you could see it as woo-woo. You could also see it as increasingly, unbelievably scientifically backed and really impactful to bottom lines, to business vision, to clarity, to the sorts of relationships that you cultivate with not just your clients, but with your employees. This has to be involved. This heart thing has to be involved.
And but what when we are, again, my experience, when we are actively avoiding something. I don't want to be like my mum. I don't want to experience heartbreak. I don't want to, well, whatever it is, I will do everything not to experience this thing. And the kind of expression in the personal development world, I suppose, is what you resist persists, right? So when you're actively like, yes, I will be heart-led over here, and as long as I'm not experiencing that sort of stuff, it will happen, right? And it will happen because what we focus on grows, and part of you is focusing on not that, so it's still hearing that, right? And also because when we want and we desire something, we're picking up the whole spectrum. So if we want abundance, whatever that means, right? Like if we want resource, we also have to be available for the absence of resource, right? The other end of this spectrum. And if I bring that back to the heart, for such a long time, I like you said, not realizing that they're controlling or not realizing that you're operating from here. Like I was really operating in this, I will give and I will be heart-led, but I will block anything from coming in that might change who I am, because that's dangerous, right? Like and I will not let anything in that's gonna hurt me. Like it's safe for me to love you, but it's not safe for me to be loved, because that is too vulnerable and I can't control that. And I like who just terrifying, right? And so actually the piece that I was avoiding was fear. And there's something that you said, which I'm kind of responding to, which is this bit of like, if of avoiding heartbreak and like having that. And for me, if I'm really honest, and it's not a thing that I think will go down well, but I've experienced more heartbreak in the last 3.5 years than ever before in my life, because I'm using my heart in its entirety and allowing it to be broken. And my thinking on that, my perspective on it has really shifted from it's something to avoid at all costs. This beautiful, sacred thing must not be dropped or broken, to it's a muscle like any of the others. And if I am choosing to grow my heart, if I'm choosing to be heart-led or heart-centered, to choose this as my compass, as the middle of who I am, then I want that to be strong. I want to build it as a muscle. The way that you build any other muscle is to take on more weight than you would otherwise be able to, and lift it and carry it. And then, that muscle rips and then it rebuilds stronger. And this is how I'm assuming, you can do this better than me because you do physiology, the physiology bit a bit better than me. But that was kind of my thinking, was like, okay, if I want to grow a muscle, I'm going to lift weights that are heavier than I'm used to, and that will, tear the muscle, and then it will repair and grow stronger. And that's kind of been I don't know, the thing that I have been growing is my heart and my ability to be in that space and to be with all of it. And so yes, there has been more heartbreak, but my heart's grown bigger and stronger and more capable of holding more.
It's really profound what you're sharing. There's two things that come up for me. The first one is when you were talking about being the lover, but not taking in the love. The really obvious thing from the perspective of power dynamic, which is a big theme. It has to be for me. I'm really boring on ethics, but it has to be for me a big theme if you are a space holder or a coach, or because there is an ethic of care, and especially if people are coming to you the same as I imagine with me for you, if people are coming to you in strong degrees of chronic discomfort, chronic pain, emotional trauma, any of those things, then we have to be really attentive to what's playing out for us in the field. And when you are only giving love, but you are not receiving love anywhere in your life, because obviously, with a client, there is a code of conduct. You are maintaining a power dynamic at all times. You are staying in control, which totally speaks to your point about vulnerability, which of course means that you never give yourself the opportunity to change the script. If the script says, when I come into vulnerability with others, I will inevitably be hurt, and that will be the breaking of me, then you continue to reenact that because that's what your physiological wiring is designed to do. And so you never get to really be alive, because being alive is about evolving. So exactly as you say, what we do with the physical body is we create controlled, gradual overload. And what that builds is two things. on a physiological level, that builds, as you say, strength, resiliency. On the level of identity, it means that I'm able to show up in the world knowing that I am someone that is capable of navigating challenge. And one of the problems of living in a frontal brain conditioned way is that because we are fear avoiding creatures, that really directly impacts how we view ourselves. So the more that I avoid of any of the things that I'm afraid of, the more I will believe myself to be incapable. And if I believe myself to be incapable, I only really have two avenues. One is to continue to avoid those things at all costs, which means that my life shrinks and shrivels. And I stop showing up in my fullness and my presence. And actually, I stop having a voice on a fundamental level. Pelvic floor seizes up most of the time, all sorts of physiological repercussions for that. Likelihood for chronic disease much higher. The other way that people do it, though, is when we're afraid, what do? We do one of the four Fs: fight, flight, freeze, fawn. What we learn from 0 to 7. So, of course, it's what we then reenact. So, someone will then often go into a fight mode. They're afraid of the fear. They're afraid of admitting to the fear. So, they're going to fight their way through the world. And you're fighting your way through the world with a storyline of it's me against the world, it's me against others. This othering is then not just so sad for how people end up experiencing their lives, but it is the opposite condition that you need, not just for health, not just for emotional processing, but for connection, collaboration, creativity, spontaneity, sexual desire. I mean, if I told most of my clients, I sometimes do, that if they're cutting themselves off from their emotions, they're going to have a way less libido. It's a motivating factor, you know?
And it's so true. And I actually like, I really want to talk, and I think this is the area of like the meat of it in some way, about this physiological or physical re and the relationship to the spiritual or the intellectual or the emotional, right? Because for me, it's very obvious. And you know, 10 years ago in one of the first books that I wrote, or the first pieces that I wrote, I've really talked about that mind-body connection in a very basic way. But like, you know, you do a whole day of studying or something that is intellectually taxing, and at the end of the day, your body is tired. Or you do a very physical day's worth of labor, you know, you lift bricks all day, you get to the end of the day, your brain is tired. And that was my kind of like, you know, there is quite evidently a link. And over the years, that has deepened, and I'm able to have more specificity across it and all of the things. But I think one of the things I really love about you and these conversations and your work and how that's evolved is that you came into the field and this work from one place. And it's taken you somewhere else. And so you, maybe more than others, have a real not just intellectual understanding, but also experiential understanding of this link.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear that framed back. I mean, you and I could talk a bit about, the neuroscience and the biology and the hormonal connections. And if there was a very basic reframe that I would offer people, it is this thing of your mind is fundamentally material. It's the same physical material as every other part of your system. That we go there for our sense of executive function does not mean that it is not being intimately impacted and is ultimately a part of this whole physical vessel. It's just a switching of the lens. We think that where we think from is who we are. Nope, not at all. Where you think from and who you think you are is fundamentally impacted by the biology that is running through your system. So that's one side of the conversation. But what you speak to about my journey has been, if I scan back, I mean, it's noodly, it's fascinating. And I do like to think that each and every one of us either chooses or is given the circumstances that cultivate what it is that we are going to be the most fulfilled by, in order to what we're going to be the most fulfilled by in terms of our delivery into the world. And for me, what that translates to is my experiences have fundamentally shaped the message that I have and the role that I'm here to offer. My earliest experiences with the body were first dissociation. I was totally physically detached. I then enacted that on myself. I had anorexia twice. It was my way of seizing power. And you and I, in the episode that we did on my podcast, we talked about something similar for you, that you felt so chaotic and confused about this physicality that you didn't quite know how to work the system. For me, what the anorexia was I did not know how to work the system of my life, and I did not how to know how to deal with the trauma that I had gone through. And so I went into a numbing, fixing state. You know, one of the things that's interesting about that kind of a condition is it has very little to do with the food. It's behavioral, the same as any other addiction. And of course, because it is an addiction, it's really difficult to spot that you got it until it's too late. I was super lucky that something in my inner stubbornness, I'm a Taurus, really, really like to kick my feet in. Something in my inner stubbornness gave me the will to surrender at the right point, which was around my Saturn return, obviously. And what was also interesting was that in that time I'd had another experience, which is I had chronic pain. And I had had chronic pain for about 10 years before I came into this last 10-year period, which has been the salvation of me, and you know, it's been the most unbelievable ride of 10 years. So when I first moved from my previous profession, which I'd had throughout all of these challenges, I was an art historian, I was a specialist in Flemish medieval painting. I then became an art fundraiser. I did a lot of that, make big money stuff, did it for big museums, massively overloaded my system with stress, became a workaholic. It was great fun. It's great fun time to be alive. But when I came into then this field of working with the body, I did it with real palpable experience of what it was like to be either divorced from or in unintentional abuse of it, right? And so I immediately had to open my honesty and my eyes to the fact that this is what I was doing to my vessel, and that the doings that I was doing to my vessel were having a huge impact on the feelings that I was having within my vessel and how I was able to perceive the world. So the consequences of ongoing stress, nutritional deprivation, social isolation, which is a huge part of both of those issues, chronic pain and anorexia, the net effect of that is it has a massive impact on what you think, what you see, how you show up in the world. Like, all of these things are an interwoven web. And I started then in this new career. Once I'd gone through the recovery journey, I started then working with physical pain. And that was my initial gateway in. But what had happened for me was that my physical recovery came through spiritual awakening. So the thing that allowed me to surrender was moving into faith, letting go of control, allowing other people to support me, being willing to receive. And so right from the get-go, my spirituality was an aspect of the work that I did. And from a nervous system perspective, I think one of the reasons that people find me so regulating, which is something I get told a lot in lots of different ways, oh, I feel so calm around you, or oh, it feels really good to talk to you about this. I don't know why it's so easy with you, but not with other people, is that my journey had to be that. There was a form of regulation that I had to very actively practice with my body. But there's also a form of regulation that intrinsically comes when you're willing to see yourself as a part of and not separate from. And when you're willing to still the mind and connect into union, universe, source, whatever words are resonant to you, even just your breath. I have no Christian allegiance, but I have a sense of the wider web. And so even now, you know, my work was physical, and then it went into training the physical and training teachers. And then it moved into a lot more of the mind stuff, which has always where I'd wanted to be. I'd wanted to be a psychotherapist when I was 18, and I just hadn't had the confidence to follow that through. So went through different coaching trainings, and so even now when I'm working with someone's mind, there's a deep awareness to the association that's going on in the body, and allowing them to not just see that but begin to feel that on a sensory level, right? That when they're in, for example, a challenging emotional dynamic with a loved one, they're feeling it physiologically first. The body is guarding first. That is sending a signal up to the brain. That brain is then going into a conditioned belief, a conditioned response, a conditioned series of comments to the partner. And the whole cycle then repeats again, and the adrenaline spikes, and it just becomes chicken and egg. So that's a big, long way of confirming exactly what you say, which is that mind, body, spirit for me are utterly interwoven. And anything that I do in the world, the one-to-ones, the coaching, the trainings, they all have that flavor.
And I totally see that. And for me, so anyone watching on videos, like, what has everybody been doing? I've been trying to work out your numerology because I've looked at all the lots of other things and I've just written it down. I'm like, oh, okay, this makes sense. And in MBIT, which is multiple brain integration technique, which is where my kind of training of that sort of stuff, what we talk about is how you're doing yourself. And how you are doing yourself impacts everything, right? And how we are doing ourselves is physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual, because it can't not be, because you are walking around in your physical body, but you're also taking with you your emotional body, your subtle body, your energy body, right? Like it exists, and how you are doing yourself will have an impact. And so, whether for me personally, whether we come at it from a spiritual standpoint, whether we come at it from a psychological standpoint, whether we come at it from a physical, whichever way we come in, ultimately at this point in my life, I'm like, I don't think there is better or worse. I don't think there is a hierarchy. I think that let's go the path of least resistance. And I used to have such a thing about that phrase, but now it's like, if it's fun, if it's interesting, if that's where your focus is, right? Like if it's easier and more fun and more interesting for you to go to the gym and or Pilates and or, you know, have a physical practice, great, do that. If it's easier for you to come in this other way, right? Like all of these things, it doesn't really matter because, and as somebody who is, my dad loves to say, really into maps and hooks, right? Like I love human design. I love numerology. I love astrology. I really love a map and a system. The reason for that is that it gives my, I actually think it's to do with my karma seven, my mastery seven. Like I like a system because I get stuck in it, right? Which, so sometimes that can be a distraction, and it definitely has been. Our karma number is the thing that we are here to work on, and like paper, but I don't call it karma number. I've always had an issue with karma. I call it our mastery number. It's here, it's what it's a it's an area of challenge that we're here to master. And mine is a seven, and that is, and the seven is very much around infrastructure and the aura and boundaries and, you know, all of these things. And we can get stuck in parts of a structure, right? We can focus in on the wrong details of it, or we can, there's kind of all of those pieces. And for years, I became very faithful to one particular system or process. And beautifully, at this wonderful age, I've reached a place where I genuinely believe that we could just throw some sticks on the ground and have a conversation about that, and it would give us the same information, right? For years in astrology, I was so like, Placidus is the only house system. I'm not doing whole sign. Having recently trained and being willing to have my mind changed and open, I'm like, oh, you know what? I don't like what my chart says if we read it whole sign. But if I stick with it and read the whole thing, it says the same thing. As does this one, as does this one, as does this one, because whichever way we come at it, it says the same thing. And when I look at your chart, because you are a May Taurus, your karma, your mastery number, is five, which is the physical body. And so that was always going to be your way in, right? Like this piece where, and so it's a really interesting thing. And then if I look at my path number, which is the inevitability, if we're willing to embrace it, the path that we're here on, mine is a three, which is creativity. It is power. It is the solar plexus. It is expansion, right? It's really owning that like power and creativity. And the more I have lent into not following anyone else's system, being my own self-authority, allowing myself to be an artist rather than in any of the other things, the more I'm able to follow my own path and kind of heal that seven, that karma. Yours is a nine. And the nine is the divine feminine, and it is the subtle body. And it is really about, it's like it's, and when I see it in you, right, it's the path of grace. It is the path of devotion. It is the path of every day a little step, not trying to do things in a big way, not trying to have a quantum leap. Like those things will happen because we get the blooming of flowers. But it's really grace that has that is the path for you. And then we have these gifts that support us, which is our gift and our destiny. And your soul number and your gift are both a six. And that is the warrior or the warrior. It's like, what will you choose? Will you choose a path of, because it's the unknown, it's project and protect, but it is really, there's a choice in every moment, right? Like you could totally go into the abyss of worrying, or you could choose the good fight. And that's the part of you that chooses ethics. It's the part of you that chooses your mindset every day, right? And then your destiny is the seven, which is why, again, we have this link. We have this 5-7 link, right? But so that means that the best strategy for you is architecture and systems and like putting together a way, right, a path, which is why people like, which is why teacher training or embodiment coaching or like putting together a training system for people is easy for you and works for them, you know?
It's really gorgeous to hear all of that. I mean, you are expert in areas that I could speak to on a felt level, but I could not speak to on an expertise level, right? And it speaks to what you're saying, which is, we throw sticks on the ground and we're arriving at the same thing. I kind of love that. If I was to sit in physical space with you, we could have a conversation without using any words. We often do. But it's really fascinating to hear it because I'm always most motivated by the human beings in front of me. So actually, one of the things that has been it's definitely been a grower and an edge for me is that when you come into this space, especially when you start thinking about marketing and sales and all that jazz, what I know for me is that I get an intuitive call of the people that I'm meant to share with in whatever way. And that is such a knowing for me. And it's always true. It doesn't always happen at the time, right? That the instinct comes. Usually I'm a bit ahead of time, but it always comes around. It always does. It's never not so far. And of course, that means that I don't necessarily follow any of the normal scripts. And part of also why I don't follow all of the normal scripts is because I come up against, I meet myself, come up against a like, I do not want to manipulate anyone into working with me. That is not the right foundation. That is not the right foundation to access someone in their fullness, in their adult. And I've really been grappling with that in the course of the last couple of years because we live in a real world where people are being driven by the head and people are looking for what are my outcomes. And they're doing it from a protective strategy place that says, I have to know in advance what this is going to be in order for me to be willing to be with you. The place that that changes is when, and this is maybe relevant for anyone that's listening that is a practitioner in our field, the place that that changes is when they get a feel for you. Because the only reason that they're going up into the head to want to know exactly what happens if I work with you is because they are in a state of guarding. It is because they cannot feel from the body that it is safe, right? If they can feel in the body that being around this person is not just safe, but they can start to feel the tingles of expansion, it will be a no-brainer for them. Because as much as the brain will come in and say, yeah, but oh, it's this and it's that, they will come back to the body, right?
And our logical brains need to be appeased. And when fear kicks in, when expansion kicks in, when change kicks in, we want to know some logics or some logistics, right? And I used to be, and so much of this is has been an evolution thing for me, because there's been times I'm like, you don't need to know that. And there's been other times where, and there's been times when I've bought from a place of, I don't need to know that. And there's been other times where I've bought from a place of, I absolutely need to know that. And that's got nothing to do with, and as soon as you're like, well, you don't need to know that because, like, it's you, this is your fear speaking. I'm like, no, it's not. It's my very practical planning head that, and so much of it. And our relationship with others is based on, I'm kind of saying this wrong, but it's comes back to that thing of ethics, of power, of who has the power, whether we are, I for a long time, in my effort to help, and because I have the ability to have practical solutions or to see the way or to do it for people, I've really believed I was helping them by doing what they wanted me to do.
So sticky. It's so sticky. I really get it.
And now, more and more, I really want people to have their sovereignty. And that when we do something for someone, we are taking their sovereignty, or we're taking their agency. And it's such an interesting line. And I see this with parents who are navigating the journey between doing everything for their children, which is caring, right? Because they can't. And then they reach a place where they're doing everything for their children because it's quicker, because it's easier, because they always have, because it makes them feel needed, right? It changes. And actually, then at some point, you're doing your children a disservice by not letting them fuck up, make a mess, get it wrong, or do it for themselves, right? So then we end up with entitled adults who can't do anything for themselves and are terrified of making mistakes. And haven't learned. So there's a certain point where our role as a parent, or your role as a parent, shifts and changes from doing and caring for by doing to holding space for them to do and get, and holding the confidence for them to do and knowing that they can and being here if you fuck up and blah, blah, blah. And for me, my role as a practitioner, it's like, yes, I could go into all the power dynamics and stuff we were talking about and ethics and all of that, but I can also see that as a human being who doesn't have children, but whose business has always been that in many ways, and I have birthed many books and programs and all sorts of things, and have went through a stage of doing a lot for my clients, and then was like, no, I'm not mothering anymore. I'm going to move into this new state where we're going to be adult to adult and blah, blah, blah. Is very much more about empowering, right? And holding the space for them to do. And I could very easily make past me wrong and go, oh, well, I shouldn't have done that. But it doesn't feel that way to me. And so it's a very nuanced conversation, but it's one I thought I would just share.
It's nuanced, but it's also on some levels really like fundamental and very basic. I think we can so easily, again, if we think about the brain has a negativity bias, right? So it's very easy for us to get into that self-critical space, which is also often the domain of the front of the head. And fundamentally, you can only see what you can see at the time that you can see it. And that's partly why, in any practice, it's useful to invite pause and dropping back and away from the mind, because the more that you do that, the more you'll be able to see things in a more expanded way with a wider lens, right? And so it gives you the opportunity to then reflect. And that's why people go on retreat, right? It gives them context outside of their normal life to think about things differently. And of course, they give themselves permission to do that. And so it's a wonderful thing. And I would say that as practitioners, we underserve ourselves with retreat, both with other people, but also in our own lives. And you and I were talking about that a little bit before we came on, is that we both pack our schedules. You have a massive business. I have three smaller businesses that all create the feeling of a big business. It's a lot. But when we're talking about that kind of tendency to help, you're spot on. The sovereignty thing is lost. I also think there's a lot of compassion that we can lend ourselves, because it's all of the obvious stuff around, I want to feel valuable. I want to feel as though they don't go through the experiences that I go through. I give them the key code to avoid the pain. All of that comes from a space of empathy and heart. And a lot of us don't know in our early careers how to bring up another person in a way that gives them real, regal stature. So it does also take time, because you have to learn how to do that in your own life, not least. You can't teach it until you've gone through it, really. But I think the other thing is, a lot of us are, going back to our first word on this podcast, we're seeking intimacy. And what is more intimate than supporting a child from a space of heart, even if you're playing with an adult? What is more intimate than that, than helping the little one inside? For some of us that didn't have that experience, that heart feeling is second to none. And for the other person to be seen in that space, to be reparented in that space, is beyond. So we got to be really kind that we did real good in those periods of time that we've all had, and that we did it probably from a place of our own challenge, but also our own love.
And for me, and we'll wrap it up, but what that does, like, it brings up real emotion, but it also takes me back to the philosophy and the faith piece of this conversation, which is, I believe we are all perfect medicine for each other. Because I know that people have gone, I shouldn't even practice because what if I fuck someone up? What if I hurt someone? What if I blah, 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 right? And it's like, okay, what if you weren't that powerful? What if there is always a control, like, a moderator, right? Someone much bigger or something, a force much greater that really, like, do awful things happen in the world? Absolutely. Is life always benign? No, but we have, we can always respond to that, and people always have agency regardless of whether or not you're giving it to them, right? Because they can always say no, they can always leave, they can always not show up, like all of that kind of stuff. And we have to, I don't have to, but I choose to have faith that the right people are receiving the right constellation in the right moment, in the right blah blah blah, blah, all of that kind of stuff, and that actually there is a power greater than me, which leads me to this kind of thing of ultimately what we're saying, and what I really felt when you were talking. It's like in that intimacy, there's no ego, and ego gets a bad rap, and that's a whole other conversation. But it's like you've got to have this willingness to not be right, and to show up fully in your heart, but be from a place of, okay, I hear you, I can change, right? Like I can do something different, or just a willingness to be less than perfect.
Yeah, to be present in your humanity. And of course, when you model that, the client learns that that's okay. The loved one learns that that's okay. My mother learns that that's okay. We gotta walk the talk, and it is not always easy. For me, the big one has been around I was when I was in the academic world, getting anything less than a high first was just not an option. So I've done the same as you. I've always reverted to credentials and systems, and I've got a good bunch of those. But actually, I realized that it wasn't that that people wanted me for. It wasn't that that people found meaningful in the work. It's how they blossom as a result of this work, which is work for them.
Yeah,
And
each of this like tiny, I'm like, I'm really worried about this tiny last piece, right? Which is for me when I was in a play, like I blamed my body for everything for most of my life. It was the scapegoat. I've talked about it in many different ways. And the piece that's fundamentally changed is changing the goal. And the goal was if I have a body that weighs less, or if I have a body that is perfect or looks a certain way, right? But it was always unobtainable. It was always a little, there was no matter where I got, if I was really honest, I couldn't see myself accurately anyway. And I was never going to meet it because I would always move the goalpost before I could meet it because it was always not about the body, but it was right. And so when I changed that goal from achieving a certain something to allowing myself to be seen and my insides and my outsides to match, everything changed. And I think that when we look at, why are you pursuing academia? Why are you assuming accolades or credentials or status or whatever, and shift the goal from all of these, look how good I am, right? To allowing yourself to be seen in your totality, everything changes. But maybe it's different. Maybe you see it differently.
No, I think that's right. Everything does change because fundamentally what you are see saying and living is I'm extraordinary as this. And my self-relating was deeply conditional before now. And it's probably really only been in the last, I'd say 2 years, I've taken a lot of radical outside in life steps to change the way that I was living. I've changed locations. I'm in new spaces. I own a home now in London. My practice has changed significantly. How I speak about it has changed. All that that has been is bringing it into alignment with what was already here. And the difference for me as I sit now is I'm not ashamed of any of who I am. I fundamentally know that I don't need to be. It doesn't mean that insecurities don't come up, but for the longest time, I thought that I had to hide my history, my experiences, my tendency to be warm rather than formal, and I just don't believe that anymore at all. And I can see how much of a script that is. And so if you or I or any of us that work in this space have the opportunity to lift the veil just 10% for someone, that's transformative.
I mean, we will wrap up this conversation and we will talk again another time. I have a practitioner friend, James Lavers, who says, every single teacher practitioner out there in the world has a secret that they are trying to hide, and if they stopped trying to hide it, their entire businesses and lives would change. And I remember when I read that from him and I was like, what is the thing I'm trying to hide, or what's that big secret? And I realized what it was for me and realized that I'd stopped trying to hide it. It's like, oh, okay, that it is true on some level of like, for me, that's the deepest sort of, that is what shadow work is. Again, like people want to put things in boxes and like say they've done it a certain way, but if you can meet the one thing I don't want you to know about me,
Yeah.
and then share it up front, right? Then to come back to the kind of theme of this, we have intimacy because we have said into me, I let you see as well, right? Like it's this piece of I'm going to show you everything, but not this. Versus, and then then there's also the overshare piece, which a lot of people do of like, I'm going to show you it first of all. Yeah. Which is not owned and can be quite a projection, right?
Yeah, the overshare always makes me really, I mean, just really grin. It's what we all, but the irony is that we overshare with people that are not qualified or appropriate to hear our story. And we undershare with the people that are. We get it kind of squiggly, we get it backwards. So, yeah, I think when you come to a space, I love that you're describing that, when you come to a space where you realize what your thing is. And maybe at different decades of your life, you realize there's a new thing that you're now newly trying to hide. And it just gets to continue as this groovy dance of evolution.
And I think for me, there's, I see your grin and I'm like, and that's the absurdity of life is half the fun. Right?
I
Like,
mean, it's so much of the
fucking ridiculous.
it's so much of the fun. Like, this is just a playground. I really feel this. This whole thing that we are
Yeah.
creating, these businesses and these relationships, they are a playground for our own self-discovery.
Yeah. And part of my secret, is I've taken it all way, I have a capacity to take it all way too seriously. Right.
Likewise.
If people want to come and carry on this conversation, find out more about you, listen to your podcast, et cetera, obviously, I'm going to put everything in the show notes, but where is the best place for them to come and connect?
So my primary social channel is the gram. So I'm AB_embodiment on Instagram. My website is going to be in the show notes, but it's that's the space to find details on the trainings that I offer, details on the kind of work that I do one to one. And I'm also going to be putting, in fact, it's already there. I think my wonderful assistant has put them there already. My podcast is called Finding Your Way Home, and it is on Apple and Spotify, but it also links through to the website. So you can catch up on the juice and you can find the gorgeous episode that you came and recorded on our channel, which was so delicious. I still got an image in my mind of you talking about riding down the snowscape on your snowboard. And the letting go process of that. So, yeah, those are the places to find me. That's kind of where I'm hanging out these days.
Amazing. Thank you. I'm really excited for people to hear this episode and the kind of intimacy of this conversation. Thank you so, so much.
Delicious to sit down with you. Thank you so much, my love.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I've been Ebony and you have been great. Thank you so much for all of your support. Please keep listening, liking, rating, and sharing so that more people can enjoy and engage with us. If you have not yet reviewed the show, please go over to whichever platform you listen to it on and leave us a review. To take the next step, if you want even more of me and more importantly, more of you in your world, go to ebonyallard.com/welcome, join the mailing list, the Maven Haven, and maybe even get your compass. And I will see you next time.